is Boring Life, featuring your hosts, Jake Waters and Johnny McFarland. Now, here's two guys who clearly have nothing better to do with their time.
Hey everybody out there, this is Jake Waters.
This is Johnny McFarland.
And we're here with a brand new podcast called This Boring Life, about anything and everything.
Exactly. It's pretty much everything you talk with your friends late at night, or on MSN, or Facebook, whatever you talk on. It's what you talk about that you don't ever record. This time, we're recording it.
You know, we got this brand new idea, and we were just like, you know what? We have such good conversations. Why don't we sit down in front of a MacBook and record them? And maybe one or two people will find it interesting.
Well, I actually suggested we use Windows, but...
Yeah, well, he's just a douchebag like that. But we're not going to get into that right now.
The hipster douchebag is obviously the one that likes Windows.
He's always got to get in the last word, everybody. Yeah. Actually, what we are going to talk about is what everybody has been talking about, the current events, the upcoming election between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama.
I'm sure you guys have heard all sorts of comments and podcasts if you listen regularly about the upcoming election, but... You know, just like everyone else, we want to take our shot at it, give our own opinions.
Johnny, what's your thought on the two main candidates?
Two main candidates, Romney and Obama? Well, I mean, that's a pretty extensive subject. Why don't you bring it down just a little bit here for me? Give me something to talk about.
All right. What do you think is the strengths of Barack Obama?
The strength of Obama? Well, the fact that he doesn't have to worry about getting reelected if he is elected this year. That gives him enormous flexibility as president because, you know, with Romney, you're going to have the lame duck session, and then that his whole term, his whole 4 years, he's going to be worried about getting elected again. That's what happened with Obama this year. They, you know, for the first year and a half, all you heard on CNN was how his popularity was fluctuating based on decisions. And you're going to see the same thing with Romney, and his campaign management is going to worry about that. So with Obama, he's got a lot of plans, and he's talked a lot, and people have said he hasn't done much. And, you know, one could argue that he probably hasn't done a whole lot, but I don't think it's because he doesn't want to. I do think politics play into this, and I think if he has 4 years to do something, he's gonna be a lot more radical. He's going to start stepping down on policies. You know, he was really weak in foreign policy. That's always been my biggest argument with Obama, is that he was afraid to tell people how he felt about, you know, with Syria. He was afraid to say, you know, we're going to commit to these airstrikes, or with Libya, you know, they're going to commit to these airstrikes. It took him weeks to decide on this, and things that could have been decided by a Republican in days. Maybe not even days, it could have been an immediate response.
Well, would that have been a good decision?
Would it have been a good decision? No, I don't think he made the right decision in the first place, but that's a whole nother issue.
Okay, so I guess you touched upon a little bit of Obama's weaknesses, so I guess we can just go right into Romney. What do you think his strengths are?
He has very few.
that's a very blunt way to put it.
I don't want to sound like the liberal Democratic douchebag, but to be absolutely honest with you, there are few Republicans I would vote for. He's not one of the ones I would ever want to see in office. The problem with Romney is that he's a figurehead. Months before the Republican nominating committee wanted to announce a forerunner, he was real shaky about even running for the presidency. He was basically pushed into it by other politicians and Senate members. The reason why I think he was so shaky is he realizes that he's not very experienced. He's a lot like Palin, only he doesn't have the drive that Palin had. I think if we see him in the presidency, what we're going to see is a lot of advisors making a lot of decisions for him.
So basically what you're saying is that we would have a puppet presidency.
Precisely. We're going to have a presidency run by his cabinet members, basically, instead of, you know, cabinet members being his advisors, well, he's going to be taking nothing but advice from
I think that's exactly what the Republicans want, and that's exactly why they wanted
Romney
to get, because they just want somebody to sign the papers and push through their legislation.
Romney's a real likable guy. He's the person
I don't exactly know if he's a real likable guy.
He's a likable guy for the demographic that they're attacking, or that they're trying to get.
But he comes across
the Tea Partiers, the extremists. I don't even think mid Republicans, middle Republicans.
I don't think he's that likable for them either. He just comes at, like, every demographic he tries to appeal to, he just comes across as and robotic.
I'm not saying he's appealing to us. We see through that. But.
Well, I think even like the Republicans, I don't like the Republicans that I talk to that are my friends. Even they don't really like Romney because they think that all he is just a Ken doll lookalike who just says whatever he thinks, you know, will appeal to whatever demographic. Which, I mean, really, what every politician does. It's just that Romney doesn't actually do it that well.
Yeah. And, well, the thing is, though, he's the most likable out of Santorum and Gingrich.
They just had a terrible pool of people. I mean, I think anybody will tell you that right there.
The only difference is that Gingrich and Santorum had their own policies. They had their own stance. And they knew what they were talking about. Whether you agree or disagree, they knew what they were talking about, and they took a stand on it.
And Romney
has flip-flopped so many times.
Yeah, he's like the John Obama's Kerry got,
I mean,
election.
Obama Election Committee, I mean, they're going to have a field day with him because he's flip-flopped on so many issues, and he backs out of issues as well. I mean, obviously, with the health care, Massachusetts, he was a fervent supporter of the mandate that's the central case against Obamacare for the Republicans now. And now you see him backtracking, saying, well, now it was just a state issue for a state problem. You know, it was a state solution for a state problem. And he's trying to basically pull away from his attacks on Obama about the mandate.
That stuff never really works that well for them.
Yeah. And I think he's going to spend a lot of time in the presidency. If he's elected, he's going to spend a lot of time in the presidency defending himself instead of getting things done.
Well, isn't that what Obama's done?
He's been put in the same situation. I think he's taken a lot of heat that was unneeded. And I think even Romney, even though he does deserve some of it, I think he's going to take a lot more heat than he deserves if he's put into the presidency. Nothing's going to get accomplished. So, I mean, that's how I feel about his weaknesses.
Yeah. Well, we initially got on his strengths, and then you moved into his weaknesses because...
Yeah.
Like you said, Mitt Romney doesn't have a lot of strength.
He doesn't have much strength. His real strength is that he can appeal to a certain demographic, while at the same time, the demographics that they need to have, like the women and the gay voters, they're just not going to get. Yeah. Young voters, gay voters, and women. Those are the ones that are going to win the election this year.
To Obama's credit, he's done a great job of, you know, I don't really want to say pandering, but, you know, that's pretty much what he's been doing to the, you know, with his whole, like, coming out, like, for gay marriage, and then his whole, like immigration reform thing that he's done recently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's done a great job at trying to make himself seem really, really likable to those demographics.
Congress just okayed the highway bill, which is, I don't know, hundreds of billions of dollars to go towards highway funding. Which appeals to your redneck working American, who's gonna need that highway work.
Those redneck working Americans could be listening to this show right now, Johnny.
But the major issue, was the earmarks that were put in, and the student loan bill, the student loan incentive that was put into it, which he basically wanted to pass in order to get young voters to come out and vote for him. Because they basically ran this scare campaign that said, you know, student loans are going to double if this law doesn't pass, and if Obama loses the election. That is extreme. I don't think it would double. I don't even know if it would rise a whole lot more than it has been in the last 10 years.
Are you saying like student debt loan, like?
Student loan price, like the
interest rate.
Interest rate.
Yeah, that would have gone up 11%. That was a fact. That's what they were, you know.
They were projecting. It's not that it would necessarily, like, that's private companies. I mean, you can't tell a private company what they're going to jump their prices to.
All right. I thought there was I thought there was like some like law or something that said that it had to go up or something.
Yeah, there was something. I don't know what it was called, but it was supposed to go up. But again, the point I was trying to make is that he's been doing things very strategically, and again, Congress passed this a pretty important bill for Obama's campaign with the whole student loans, because that's going to appeal to a lot of college voters. And I mean, the big argument is that young voters are what won him the election last year or last term. And I think that's, you're going to see the exact same thing happen again.
All right. So now time for the big question. Between the two of them, Mitt Romney and Barack Obama, who would you prefer? Now, I know you don't particularly like either of them, but let's just say for hypothetical purposes, you had to choose between them.
Hypothetically, I would prefer to have Obama because he's going to be an effective president. Agree or disagree with policies, presidents that get in there and do things are the presidents you want to have. Again, you may or may not disagree with the laws, but even with George Bush, he was a very aggressive president. And I like that. I respect that. And that's what Obama's going to have going for him coming into the second term, because he doesn't have to worry about re-elections. He doesn't have to worry about his legacy as a president, because it's pretty well formed for him. I mean, he's going to have a positive legacy as long as he doesn't do some, you know, as long as he's not involved in some scandal or something.
There's a lot that can happen in 4 years.
Yeah, so. I agree, but I just think that he's going to at least try to push Congress into passing law, as opposed to this last 4 years where they've just been pandering around. They've been kicking their feet, not moving or not passing bills, and they've been doing it on purpose. You know, there was a bill for the 9/11 survivors that, like, they didn't pass it because, what was it, like, they were going on vacation or something before.
Yeah.
They were supposed to have passed it before they went on vacation.
Something silly like
that. And
it
didn't pass. And, you know, 9/11 victims were suffering for that reason.
Yeah.
And that was strategically, again, to hurt Obama, because, you know, people were going to, like, well, he's our president, he should have passed it. Obviously, they don't realize that Congress is the lawmaking body of our government. If it came down to it, I would prefer to have Obama. Less on policy, more on the fact that he's going to do things. He's going to be an effective president, I think.
I think Romney, for at least partially for part of his presidency, I think he'd be effective in that he would just push through whatever Republicans wanted it to get done. So, I mean, I think a lot would get
assuming
done.
Assuming they have...
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. For a little bit, like, you know, he's going to have the majority for a little bit. You know, just like Obama had a Democratic majority, even though Obama didn't actually do anything with his Democratic majority.
Right.
But that's a whole other thing for a different time. Anyways, I feel like we've probably spent enough time talking about the real election. I mean, we could spend a whole podcast talking about this kind of stuff. But there's other things that we need to get to in a short amount of time to get to them. So let's move right along to movies.
Movies!
This is what everybody wants to hear about.
Of course.
You know, there's a big... Movies are a big, big-time industry
big part
for a
of
reason.
Industry.
So let's go right into it. Let's talk about some of the movies that are coming out as the week that we're taping this.
Ted.
Seth MacFarlane.
Like awesome movie. I don't care what anybody says.
I don't know. It just looks like a live-action version of one of Seth MacFarlane's animated sitcom ideas.
Oh, I completely agree. I don't like Seth MacFarlane that much. But,
I mean... It looks like it could, like, I mean, there was, like, in the trailer, it looks like it, you know, there's a couple of funny jokes from the trailer that, you know, but I've been wronged by trailers before,
It's one of those movies that I feel like I'm going to watch. I'm not going to go to the theaters to watch it, don't get me wrong, but I feel like I'm going to watch it and I'm going to enjoy it at least once. Those movies are made to make a profit. They're just made to be blockbusters, not great artistic movies that are just going to make billions of dollars, but...
Yeah.
I think I'm going to get a kick out of it. I feel like I will.
It's been getting decent reviews. I mean, as of this taping, it's about 66% on Rotten Tomatoes, which isn't particularly good, but it's good enough that
for its genre.
I mean,
Rotten Tomatoes usually just destroys those types of movies.
Actually, I think I read a review recently from Roger Ebert, and he gave the movie 3.5 stars. And
Did he really?
Yeah, he usually doesn't like those kinds of movies. So
yeah.
I'm not saying Roger Ebert's word is law, but I do trust him a lot of the time
been
on
right
his movies.
A lot.
Yeah, so I think it's safe to say that, you know, if Roger Ebert likes it, then there's at least a little bit of value in it.
Yeah, like I said, I think it's just going to be one of those good humorous movies you watch once or twice, or maybe you go have a movie night and you guys are in it. it should be a pretty good flick.
All right, so what else is coming out? Well, there's a new Tyler Perry movie.
Oh, yeah.
That currently has 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
And I personally feel like it should have negative tomatoes. They should redesign their website to have negative tomatoes for this movie.
Normally I'd, chastise Johnny for, being so harsh on a movie when it hasn't even come out yet, but I don't know, man. Tyler Perry's been writing the same movie for about 3 years now, so.
Well, I mean, he's got that other movie that, I don't know, has it come out yet? Yeah, it has. The movie where he just plays a regular guy.
It's so unmemorable.
Yeah. Well, now I can't think of the name of it, but it didn't do well either. It was supposed to be one of his dramatic pieces.
Are you talking about Four Colored Girls with Whoopi Goldberg and all
no,
that?
No, it was a new movie.
A new movie? Yeah. I haven't even heard about this
one. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's already out. But yeah, it's supposed to be one of his dramatic pieces, and it just... Yeah. Oh, man, I don't know.
How many times can he dress up like a big, sassy black woman and have people
and
go see
it? And they've been his most successful movies, too.
I don't understand it. Like, he's one of... Like, I think he is the top paid entertainer, in the industry.
Oh, yeah.
For no reason. His movies are terrible, man. I've sat through probably one Tyler Perry movie in my life, and that was more than I ever needed to see from him.
Yeah, I've watched some. He's got some of the lesser known movies on Hallmark Channel and stuff, and I've watched a couple of those dramatic movies. And I'd rather watch soap operas. I really would. The acting in soap operas is just brilliant compared to his movies.
That's a good point to make. I feel like there's something else that was coming. Oh, yeah, Magic Mike. The stripper movie.
I'm looking forward to that.
Channing Tatum. I am not looking forward to that movie.
That movie gives me a boner.
Well, that's more than I needed to know, Johnny. But I don't know. It's gotten good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes as of this recording. Actually, better than Ted. But I don't know. I just think from the trailers make it look not good.
It may be an absolutely horrible movie. I'm not going to lie. But I'm thinking about watching it in theaters. I'm deeply considering watching it.
Are you seriously? You'd pick that movie over Ted to go see?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's a better made. It looks like it's a better made movie. I know what I'm going to expect. I'm going into Ted knowing what to expect. I have no idea what
Naked
to expect.
Naked men.
That sounds awesome.
That sounds awesome.
Well. No, I don't know. I just think it's going to be interesting. It's such a unique plot that I think it could be a pretty interesting movie. Like, how many movies you've ever seen that were about male strippers? I mean,
I can't name any.
Like
the head.
Movie I'm thinking to compare this to is maybe Coyote Ugly.
Yeah, that's a female stripper.
Right. Well, I'm just saying that.
There's been a lot of women strippers.
That's the
movies.
Only
like,
movie that I'm.
Showgirls, which was terrible. Striptease, starring Demi Moore. Excuse me.
Yeah.
I haven't actually seen that, but I've heard it's in the middle. I don't know. I can't say for sure because it's not targeted towards me, obviously. So
yeah.
I'm not in the demographic that would go see Magic Mike. But it could be interesting. It could cross. It could be a crossover hit. Well,
I've been wrong. I've definitely been wrong before. But when I thought a movie sounded really good, but I really think this one might end up being an okay movie.
Actually, an interesting tidbit about where we live. Our theater, which is a very small theater, doesn't have a lot of screens.
It just got digital.
Just recently.
Within the last couple days, got digital.
Magic Mike, the opening of that actually sold out, which is rare for here. And
usually it's just the midnight showings of big blockbuster movies.
And the people who bought the tickets, the main demographic was old middle-aged women. So
that's not surprising.
So I imagine that they're going to be the driving force behind the sales of this movie. If this movie debuts higher than Ted, it'll be because of the middle-aged housewife demographic.
Yeah, I think Ted appeals to a larger demographic, though. I mean, because it appeals to middle-aged men, kids, and teenagers.
Yeah, but I feel like the housewives will come in droves this week, but as of next week, it's going to drop off big.
Oh, yeah. I don't think either movie is going to flop, though, because there are just too many big actors in.
Yeah, I mean, I can... Ted, I'm iffy on. Ted, I have a feeling... Ted, I think, will make money, but I don't think it's going to be this big, huge success.
No, no. It's just going to be just like, you know, every other comedy that comes out in the summer.
Yeah, like that Adam Sandler, that's my boy.
Right. I thought that looked good, then I realized I was wrong.
Never think an Adam Sandler movie is going to be good, man. Because you go in there and you're expecting, you know, like something good, and you just, you know, and just really disappointed.
But Magic Mike, I think, especially with the actors in it, it's going to do well. Whether it's a good movie or not, the fact that you've got Channing Tatum and...
I think you're the first person I've ever talked to actually be excited for a movie because Channing Tatum is in it.
I don't think it's because he's in it. I do like him as an actor. I didn't think I would because I liked Never Back Down, but...
just look at his IMDb.
But I thought he was going to be... I thought he was going to be that kind of actor, the one that's just... just plays those, you know, those suave, sexy roles. But in reality, he's pretty flexible, and he's shown that. Just recently, I watched 21 Jump Street.
That actually is a really good movie.
He did really well in that movie.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, and I think he can play more versatile roles. Nobody thinks he can because he started out doing, you know, your typical model roles. But I think he's a lot more flexible than people think he is.
And even Magic Mike, which is kind of one of those roles, it's different enough. Like, I mean, it's still like, you know,
he's not going to be playing the same thing.
He's like, you know, I like to call him like the Megan Fox of like, you know, like for female viewers, because, you know, like I feel like they have about as much talent as each other. But, I mean, maybe Channing Tatum has a little bit more because he was actually, you know, really good in 21 Jump Street.
I mean, she hasn't played any other roles besides...
Well, you know, really, neither has he. I mean, he was
in Dear John. Yeah. He played that extremely well. That was an extremely successful movie.
Yeah, but it wasn't a good movie.
Then he was in a comedy. Well, you don't think it's a good movie, but that doesn't make his acting bad. You know what I'm saying? The fact that he can successfully play that role is what I'm saying. Him as an actor, and I'm not saying movies aside, him as an actor, he's shown that he's flexible in his short career. He hasn't been around for very long, and he's shown that he can jump genres, and that's what makes me like him.
All right, I see your
Megan
point.
Fox hasn't jumped any genres yet.
Nothing where her sex appeal hasn't been like the main driving focus of her movies, I guess.
Yeah, correct.
So,
but you know, I may be wrong about Magic Mike. I'm probably going to go watch it.
All right. Well, you heard it from Johnny. Go see Magic Mike. Anyways, before we wrap up movies, I want to get touch upon any movies that you've seen recently that you'd like to talk about. I know you've seen Rock of Ages recently.
Right, Rock of Ages. That was a good movie. Personally, now, I'm biased because I like musical movies. I always have. I mean, Moulin Rouge was good.
I hate that movie.
Jake's a douche. Moulin Rouge was good. I liked Sweeney Todd.
I don't hate Moulin Rouge. I just think it's a bit too over the top for me.
Across the Universe was really good. I enjoyed that. I hate the Beatles. Jake will attest for this. I do not listen to the Beatles music at all, but I loved Across the Universe. I've seen that movie 4 or 5 times now. I really enjoy musical movies, especially ones where, like, I won't get into why I like that one so much, but
yeah, so another time.
Exactly. But Rock of Ages was really, really good. I'm not a big metal fan as far as 80s hair metal goes, but they did a really good job of incorporating songs and, you know, creating a divisive plot out of it. And Tom Cruise, Tom Cruise did a really good job playing a rock star, which is weird because you don't see him playing anything but a spy. You know,
I mean, Tom Cruise, he's kind of a versatile actor.
Oh, yeah, don't get me wrong.
I like Tom Cruise.
It's just that he's so well known for his...
I mean, I'm one of the few people that, like, you know, legitimately likes Tom Cruise in almost anything he's in. So.
I've never not liked him. Vanilla Sky, that movie was incredible.
Hey, I recommended that movie to you.
Yeah, that movie was incredible. I guess I didn't tell you I watched that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, I really liked it.
Yeah, Tom Cruise, man.
But I was just a little surprised that he could play in that, because that's probably one of his more outlandish roles that he's ever played. I can't think of any movies that were more outlandish.
Collateral, where he was the villain.
He
was a damn good villain.
Right.
I love Collateral, man.
Right.
If anybody, you know, doubts Tom Cruise's acting abilities, just watch him in that movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Like, watch Mission Impossible, then watch Collateral, and you'll see the difference.
Yeah. Oh, a quick note about Collateral, just kind of going off topic. They originally wanted Adam Sandler in Jamie Foxx's role.
Oh, man.
I know, right?
That would have ruined the whole movie.
It's terrible. I'm so glad they went with Jamie Foxx instead of Adam. I mean, Adam Sandler, he's done a few dramatic roles, and he's been all right. But
I mean, Punch Drunk Love was probably my favorite movie from him.
Yeah.
And that was a dramatic role, but, I mean, that's just about it.
Him in that movie would not have worked at all, especially seeing how it, how it ended up. Anyways, I can't say that I have too much interest in seeing Rock of Ages because I'm not a big musical fan, and I hate 80s hair metal, so I don't think that movie would really appeal to me at all. I mean, it might be well made and everything, but I just can't. I can't see any situation where I could sit down and actually enjoy that movie. Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
Alec Baldwin kisses Russell Brand in this movie. That made the whole movie.
Is that the main selling point for you?
I don't care what anybody says. Alec Baldwin kissing Russell Brand was just an epic time in movie history.
Oh, yeah.
I love Alec Baldwin as it is. Russell Brand's always been funny. And the fact that those two played, like, these closet gay characters that eventually came out to each other, that was just... That was perfect.
That's a bit of a spoiler alert for those who haven't seen the movie. Thanks, Johnny. We're already turning away the people that...
We're talking about a movie that has already been out for a while.
So. I know, but, you know, it's still in theaters. People can still go see it, you know. But, I mean, I mean that's not that like, hidden of a thing anyways.
Yeah.
I think
most people by now know that occurred.
Be just from the musical.
Because it was a shock and all type thing.
I think, yeah. I mean, it's not like, you know, Darth Vader is Luke's father in Empire Strikes Back. So, it's not that big of a deal. But, anyways, sorry for those who...
It's just a side plot to the whole movie. It's not even that big of a deal.
Sorry for those who Johnny offended by spoiling... a little bit of the movie.
And those of you who are against gay rights.
And we could have those people listening too.
It's funny that they did that with 80s hair metal.
I know.
That's the demographic that's probably going to be the most against it.
I know. That's the fun. I do like that little point right there. But like I said, not a big musical fan. So.
Yeah.
I didn't even like being as big of a Beatles fan as I am.
If you ever enjoyed musicals, I think this would be a good one. You guys would enjoy it. So.
Yeah, musical fan. Go see
it. It's not like Across the Universe great, but it's...
You know, 80s hair metal band, maybe go see it. Other than that, I can't really recommend it to anybody else.
Yeah.
But anyways, moving right along. We're 27 minutes into this.
Yeah, we are. We made it.
We're doing good, right?
We want to move on to a new
section? Yeah, of course we are. I just wanted to let the listeners know that... We're doing good on time right now. So.
Here we are.
Here we go. Music, my specialty.
Oh yeah, his specialty.
As Johnny would know, because as I routinely school him in musical knowledge.
That's what happens.
But that's what happens. That's not what we're doing today.
We actually have something special for you guys.
We came up with this idea where we would take a certain genre of music, and we would both recommend. An album in that genre to each other. We both listened to it, and then we would discuss what we thought about about those albums. And we may touch a little bit on music news, just a little bit at the end, because I feel like there is something that an argument that Johnny and I have been ongoing for a few weeks now that I feel like we should take to the podcast.
Yeah, I think we should.
Yeah, but that's a bit of a tease right there. We won't get into that right now. Let's start with the albums that we've been listening to. Our genre for this episode
was grunge.
Yes, a genre that I became involved with freshman year of high school. Johnny actually suggested the album from my first favorite grunge band, the band that actually got me into grunge, Soundgarden.
You were into them in middle school.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but I wasn't into, like, grunge. I became really, like, enamored with it my freshman year of high school. Okay. Not so much anymore. I've kind of moved past it a little bit. But I still enjoy occasionally listening to an album in the genre. So, especially since I haven't listened to this particular one in a couple years. Super Unknown by Soundgarden. Soundgarden, as many people know, are one of the pioneers of grunge. One of the big four. The big four being Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, Alice in Chains, and Nirvana. Soundgarden were always one of the more psychedelic bands. You know, they kind of had They had a little bit of a more metal feel. Not as much of a metal feel as Alice in Chains, but definitely more of like a, I guess, Led Zeppelin kind of feel to them, especially with Chris Cornell and his vocals. So that's obviously the strong point of the album. I would say the main selling point is listening to Chris Cornell sing, because, man, that guy can sing, let me tell you. If you and he still has it, too. I've seen some recent live performances from him, and, man, that guy can still go.
He's straining a little bit now, but...
Well, I mean, yeah, but he can... But still, for how old he is...
Yeah, I agree.
Still hitting those notes, that's pretty impressive. Super Unknown, it's the album that broke Soundgarden into the, like, mainstream mass public. It actually is their only number one on the Billboard 200 charts, 1994, I think. Yeah. It has a nice mixture of hard rock, slower tempo stuff, and just weird out there stuff. Let me start with the more hard rock songs. Some of my favorites on there include My Wave. I really like that song, and I really like Kickstand, actually.
Why'd you like Kickstand?
I mean, it's one of the shorter songs on it, but it's just like a burst of energy, and it just it's like well needed. It's a well placed. That album is sequenced pretty well. You know, it flows really good as an album. And as far as like ballad, before I get into this, Super Unknown has the song that actually got me into Soundgarden on it, Spoon Man, which is one of the weirder songs. Which it's actually weird that song was even a single to begin with, because of how the spoon solos and stuff. You would think they would have went with something a little more
alternative.
You know, public consumption, which they did with Black Hole Sun, which was obviously the big song that broke them through. But Spoon Man, I still dig that song a lot even after all these years.
Yeah.
But
Jake's battled with heroin addiction for a long time. So.
Oh yeah, totally. I really relate to that album, or not that song, but no. Anyways, some of the slower tempo songs, not that big on. I really like Fell on Black Days,
it's my favorite song of the album.
But The Day I Tried to Live, I'm not too big on that. I mean, I like the lyrics, but doesn't really do a whole bunch for me. And but the one song that stood out to me this time when I listened to it, which I hadn't really noticed before, was 4th of July, because it has these really cool down-tuned guitars.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, it's really slow, and it kind of has like this like almost like stoner rock feel to it. Like if you ever listened to any bands, like, I don't want to say like, you know, like maybe more stoner metal-ish, like, you know, kind of has like a, like, you know, like it's kind of hard to describe, but, you know, like listening to like a slower tempo.
It's like listening to Typo Negative.
That's a good one. Not so much vocal style.
But the guitar.
And I was even gonna say Black Sabbath.
Black Sabbath type guitars would be a good one.
But yeah, I really like that song. And if you're gonna listen to any song from that album, I would pick that one. So enough about Soundgarden. Let's get into your album.
All right, Jake picked the Screaming Trees, "Sweet Oblivion." That album. Well, first of all, I won't be surprised if you don't even know who Screaming Trees are. They were... To say that they were a pioneer of grunge rock would be wrong, because they were never hugely successful in the mainstream, but they were one of the first grunge bands. I mean, they began their albums in the late 80s, I believe. It wasn't until their fifth album of Sweet Oblivion, that's what it was, fifth album, that they gained any mainstream success. That album, I listened to it, and this is the first time I've ever actually listened to it all the way through. Screaming Trees had always been kind of one of those bands I had on my playlist, but I never had albums, and I never really listened to them thoroughly. They're a great band. I've actually decided that they're probably in my top 15. It's a big jump just from this album. I listened to some more of their stuff later on, but just after this album, I decided they're probably my top 15. Now, given the top, 12 of the bands in my top 15 are all grunge bands anyway, so it's not that surprising that they jumped so fast for me. But the one song on there that I preferred more than the rest of them, more than their more mainstream songs, was Butterfly. That's a song that you should include in here somewhere. Butterfly was actually one of their least popular songs. It had never even been considered for a single release, which surprises me because it's a very catchy song. I don't know why I like it so much. I'm not completely sure what it's about.
How would you describe Screaming Trees' sound? Like
compared their sound?
To,
okay.
Compared to the other grunge bands?
Their sound is different than a lot of grunge bands. I think the closest band I could compare them to is Bush.
Really? Really? Bush?
Well, vocally.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I always, whenever I listen to Mark Lanegan, I always think of like a grungier Tom Waits. I'm not going to lie.
He doesn't have a whole lot of... The thing is, his voice is real mellow like Bush. Like, Bush doesn't fluctuate a whole lot. And in those songs, I mean, that whole album, his voice doesn't fluctuate hardly at all. There are only... I know Butterfly, he fluctuates.
See, I guess
in the chorus.
I don't like Bush that much, and I really like Screaming Trees.
He doesn't want that comparison.
I'll let you make it. It's okay. All right.
But guitar-wise, his vocals match this guitar. It's a lot slower. It's a lot deeper, which is typical of grunge bands, obviously, unless you get Soundgarden, which have that more rock feel to them. But, and even Nirvana, I mean, they've got a much more punk rock sound than people think, as compared to like Bush, bands like Bush and Screaming Trees. But their guitarists in Screaming Trees is really upbeat. Their music is really upbeat, even though pretty much everything they sing about in this album is more sordid and less. I guess there aren't any songs that you'd start singing because you're in a good mood. A lot of them are pretty. They sound, and again, I would be able to tell you what a lot of their songs are about, but they seem very troubled. And his voice matches that, but you've got this upbeat sound, and so you're sitting here bobbing your head, listening to this music, not realizing that there's a really serious undertone to their music. And I like it. I really like the upbeat sound that they have. And it seems his voice and his vocals, even his writing, is a lot less refined. And obviously, grunge is famous for being non-refined. I mean, it's the garage bands that... You know, they came out and really made their names. And I think Screaming Trees really epitomizes that. And obviously, I think it's partly because they gained very little mainstream success. They didn't even sign with a record till their fifth label. Well, with a major label. Yeah, major label till their fifth record. And so they always kind of had that same feel, as opposed to bands like Nirvana, who just came out of the pens running. I mean, they faced a lot more... pressure from the audience than I think than Screaming Trees did, and they never really changed their sound.
You know, it's interesting to me that you say that, because it sounds like I've always thought that Screaming Trees, I mean, it's weird that they never gained a lot of mainstream acceptance, because their sound is it's not like it's not that inaccessible to like mainstream people. I think their sound, you know, could have been very easily, you know, accepted by a large audience. I'm not sure why it didn't, but you know, especially even compared to Nirvana, man, I would say Screaming Trees have a lot more like a mainstream ready sound compared to them in a way.
What I would argue is that you got Nirvana, and they're lyrically, they appeal to young audience, and those are the guys that drove grunge. You know that it appeals to the young audience, while bands like Soundgarden and Screaming Trees, they're lyrics are a lot more metaphysical than that, and sometimes there's some really deep meaning that people didn't pick up on, and so I think that's part of why they weren't as successful as Nirvana, because Nirvana,
just not, like,
bottom line is Nirvana appealed to the 18-19 year old kids out there.
So what you're saying is they just didn't have like their lyrics, they were too complex, they weren't like
Yeah, and
they weren't like they didn't have enough broad appeal to other people. Which, I mean, I can kind of understand that, but I don't think Kurt Cobain's lyrics, like, had that much. Like, I mean, half the time I had no idea what he's even talking about in his songs, you know?
Well, again, I have a lot more experience than I think you do with Nirvana.
But yeah, I like Nirvana a lot, but I'm just not, like, I mean, I'm not that in, like, gross with them as you
are. A lot of their music, and again, I've watched a lot of documentaries on him and stuff, and I know where he draws his experience from, and I can see how it picked up in people. Obviously, this doesn't shatter your argument or anything, but it Smells Like Teen Spirit.
I mean that song. But those lyrics, those lyrics aren't, like, they're very, they don't,
It's the video.
Okay, there you go. That's they
appealed,
you're saying.
The band themselves appealed to
you. Okay, I get what you're saying now, because, I mean, the video, I think, is one of the driving forces behind what kicked them off. But anyways, let's not digress into Nirvana for a little bit. But
again, the Screaming Trees, I think that was their biggest. What was that single on there? I can't remember the name. Second song on there now.
It was
their most successful single, and I can't even remember what it is. I know it's the second song on the album, and it just, I have no idea what it's about. I wouldn't be able to guess for you. I would not be able to look at that and give you an honest.
I'm sure if there was, like, a huge Screaming Trees fan listening to this right now, he would, like, be jumping all over Johnny and be like, I know this means this, this, and this. But, you know, obviously Johnny is going to be listening to them a lot more in the future.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's going to become more acquainted with their stuff.
Honestly, their weakness to me was the lyrics. And again, a lot of grunge, I mean, their lyrics don't seem to make a lot of sense to some people, and mostly because they didn't give a shit about what the audience thought. They wrote their music for themselves, but they don't have a whole lot of lyrics per song. I mean, it's usually a couple very short stanzas with a short chorus that's repeated, you know, 5 or 6 times, and that's fine because they still sound really good, but I don't think there's a lot of substance to their lyrics to the audience. To them, yeah, but I can understand why they don't appeal to a lot of people, because lyrically they're not very substantive.
Well, before we go into the last part of this music discussion, I'd like to give a shout out to Mark Lanegan, who has a very I wouldn't say like it's a very mainstream successful solo career, but his solo career, completely different from Screaming Trees. It's more bluesy singer-songwriter stuff. I absolutely love that guy. I have his 2004 album Bubblegum on my computer, and it's like a more accessible version of Tom Waits,
Except for Tom Waits blows.
Yeah, let's not get into that right now. Johnny doesn't like Tom Waits, for you Tom Waits fans out there, just like I don't like Bush. But
you mean those college students out there that don't know real talent?
Yeah, shut up, Johnny. But this is about Mark Lanegan, all right? He also had his new album just came out last year. I would highly recommend checking out Blues Funeral. That was the Screaming Trees. Moving into the last part of our music discussion. This is an argument Johnny and I have been having off and on for the past...
Please comment on this.
Two, 3 weeks. Johnny... you know, you wouldn't really, expect this from him, seeing as, you know, he just spent a whole 10 minutes, you know, talking about how much grunge and Screaming Trees have affected his life. Yeah. He's actually a very big mainstream country fan. Aren't you, Johnny?
Not mainstream country fan, not necessarily.
No.
By labeling me the mainstream country fan, I think you're turning away a lot of people. Just because I like some music that is mainstream... doesn't make me a mainstream country fan.
You were telling me how you...
I hate Jason Aldean. He's mainstream country. I hate Taylor Swift.
But you love listening
to... She's mainstream country.
You love listening to country radio.
I do listen to a lot of country radio.
Which is mainstream country.
But a lot of it's not, though. That's the thing. You're seeing a resurgence of the outlaws of country. And that's what I like to listen to.
All right.
And yeah, they're getting mainstream success, but that's like saying Nirvana is a mainstream band. They're not mainstream, but they have mainstream success.
That takes us into the argument we've been having. Johnny thinks there's this group, the band Perry. Maybe you've heard their song, If I Die Young. It's kind of, for those of you pop fans out there, even if you're not a country fan, I'm sure you've heard that song at least once. My main argument against the song has to do with, I feel like it's like...
Against the band.
It's it's not really against the band.
I mean, you pretty much decided you hated them because of this song.
Well, I mean, the song... That's how this argument started. The song is trivializing... It's, like, trivializing and, you know, and Young Death and making it seem like this big glamorous thing. I normally wouldn't care about that, but it gets to the point where the only reason she wants to die young is so people will pay attention to me. Oh, I'm so... Woe is me. And the thing is... It's kind of also pandering to a younger audience because she's 28 years old. She's not even, you know, she's just on the cusp of what people would consider dying young or whatever her demographic is. So, you know, I just don't... It's like trying to pander to the Taylor Swift fan base.
That's
like as like true. Like they're con- like, you know, trying to make themselves come off as like a more deeper, like meaningful version of Taylor Swift. And I'm sorry, I just can't get behind that.
First of all, I'd like to point out that a band Perry, while they are labeled country, they've never really accepted that genre name, that label. They've always considered themselves an alternative band.
They're just a pop group.
They're not pop at all.
They're very pop.
No, they're not played on pop stations.
Yeah, they are.
No, they are not.
If I Die Young was played
on pop stations. I promise you, they are not played on... I will put money on this.
All right,
If
I hear If I Die Young on our local pop station, I will call you, I will tell you to give me $5. All right?
Because that's fair. They're not a pop band. They're not a very old band either. They really do consider themselves, and this is straight from them, their interviews, they consider themselves just kind of an alternative country band that pulls a lot from the blues and a lot of from bluegrass music, a lot of from the folk music. And lyrically, you know, you see Jake here trying to destroy them lyrically when you could do this with any band. It's, you know, you could take one song from any band and say, why the fuck did they write this? I mean, it's just a horrible song. But honestly, If I Die Young, I don't believe that the way he interprets it is what they were trying to go for. I don't believe that the point of this song was to make millions of dollars. I believe that she is the songwriter. This wasn't written by someone else. What I'm arguing is that she's not trying to trivialize death at a young age. She's trying to, I think she's trying to relate to what it's like dying young. You know, I'm not saying that it's just very hard to describe. I don't think she's trying to make a play on it. I think she was trying to be very serious with the song. You know, yeah, you could say maybe she's not young, but that doesn't really make any difference to me. I think the point of making a lot of this music is to connect to your audience, and a lot of country today's is directed to younger people. It's the younger demographic. Anymore, at least. I mean, it didn't used to be that way. It used to be like your middle-aged 30s, 40s people. But nowadays, it's, you know, it's turned to the younger genre. And If I Die Young, to me, seems like it's a deeper country song. It's not one of those songs. I told Jake about this. They're one of those bands that understand the idea of the double entendre. They understand that there's more to music than just talking about trucks and America. And
like Toby Keith.
Beer. They're not Toby Keith. That's why I don't consider them mainstream country in the first place, is because the mainstream country songs, that's what they're about. I mean, you don't find deep... And to say that to compare them to Taylor Swift makes me want to Falcon Punch people. Because Taylor Swift is a pop artist. Her music you hear on pop stations a lot, while you do hear it on country stations a lot. She's a pop artist, and the difference between Taylor Swift and a band Perry is that her music is mostly about the same thing, and it's all about young love, and there's no depth, I guess. I don't see any depth. Like, love to me in music, to me there's no depth to that. But taking, you know, tackling this idea of death, tackling death in general, to me is a lot deeper, and the song has a lot more meaning. I get a lot more meaning out of it. Now, I'm not trying to say Van Perry is just the greatest band ever or anything. I don't think it's right to hate them for this song. And you may not like the song, I don't know. And I'm not going to try to defend it any more than I have, but I like the band, and I encourage listening to the album, because there's a lot more to them than this.
All right, that's fair enough. Yeah, present a good argument. not going to change my opinion, but you present...
It's because you blow.
You present a well-thought-out argument for those who happen to be listening to this right now.
I guess.
Anyways, before we wrap this up, Johnny would like to give a few final interesting tidbits that don't actually fit under any of the other things, subjects that we've been talking about. So what do you have for us today, Johnny?
For all of you dipshit postmodernists out there, you can go ahead and turn off this station. We better clarify first. Because we had to clarify this with Jake when we were talking about it originally. I'm talking about postmodernism as the philosophy. Well, as quote-unquote philosophy. I don't personally believe it's a philosophy. I'm very interested in the subject, and I would argue that it's just this recyclable circle of nonsense. And there just happens to be a website that epitomizes that idea of the postmodern theorist's idea of meaninglessness. Only it applies it to postmodernism, which is extremely interesting. Many arguers like Lacan argue that there's just no meaning. There's no universal truth. There's nothing but abstraction, and nothing can be objectively truth or true. But the hole in that argument is that he's saying nothing can be objectively true as an objectively true statement. And so this website capitalizes on that by basically taking postmodern tidbits, actual pieces of postmodern work from famous philosophers, and it basically generates, it's put into a generator, and it jumbles them all together, and it puts different titles for each postmodern theory, and it's basically just a bunch of different philosophers who weren't relating to each other at all. It's basically tidbits that are completely unrelated to each other, stuck into sentences and put into paragraphs. And when you read it, it flows. It actually, like, the arguments seem to flow, but then when you try to explain it, it makes absolutely no sense at all. And the point of the website is to show that while postmodernists say there's no truth to anything, by saying that, there's no truth to postmodernism. And I think it's a very fun website to play with. For all you trollers out there, it would be a great thing to just to cut and paste and put this on forums and then have just start like 200, 300 comment arguments on this and then just totally just basically post the website and everybody's going to feel incredibly retarded. But that's my little tidbit for the day. Check out that website. It's called elsewhere.org.
/promo. Promo.
I think you can get there by just
not promo.
Yeah, I think you can get there just by typing. Either type in postmodern generator, it'll probably be your first search on Google, or type elsewhere.org and you'll get there. If you use Bing, then you're retarded and you don't get to use this website anymore.
Wow, some strong words towards Bing to end the show. Well, that's the end for our first inaugural podcast, This yep. Boring Life. I hope you enjoyed it.
Just
shy of an hour.
An hour, yeah.
You know, so I hope all one of you who listened to this enjoyed it.
Again, comment. We want to hear feedback.
Comment, review, you know, net positive, negative. Feel free to destroy it's all Jake. Good.
I will comment back. So if you guys want to start an argument or something, or you want to start a discussion about anything we talked about, any discussion, you know, whether you agree or disagree, I'll comment back. I don't know if Jake's willing to or not.
Yeah, I'm probably.
I'm willing to start a full on conversation.
Yeah, I'm not a big.
I'm really
online
into it,
arguer.
So.
I don't think that's
well, not
very,
even
very constructive. But Johnny will argue till the cows come home. So if you have some complaints towards him, or if you have positive comments towards him, he will respond. If you have positive comments or complaints towards me, I will read them, but I probably won't respond back. All right, and just some closing tidbits for myself. We are going to have, might not be as of this broadcast, but hopefully it will be, a Facebook page for the show, so feel free to like it there as well. And tell your friends, or tell them that we suck, either way.
This is a pyramid scheme. Get as many people in as possible.
Yeah.
We will become rich.
Yeah, tell them you like us, or tell them that we suck. We're fine.
Either way, they'll watch us. Right. Rebecca Black.
See ya.